Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
Oh yeah, the music comes up, the lights go on my studio screen, and everything's exciting once again. We're back on the air. Greg Penglis here for Action Radio, coming to you from, as I say, beautiful downtown Milton, which is in Florida, on the panhandle, on the upper left side, way up in the northwest corner, just under Alabama. So it's cold outside. You know, I haven't actually been out to enjoy it yet, but it's apparently about 65 degrees, which is absolutely fabulous, fabulous weather. Sort of reminds me of Bay Area a little bit. There's only two things I miss about San Francisco. One is the fog, because it kept everything so moderate and wonderfully cool in the summertime. And the second thing are avocados, which weren't necessarily from the Bay Area, but they're a lot cheaper in California. But other than that, you can have it. I'm having much more fun here. So we got a cold front coming through. I've got that post on my Facebook page, so you can take a look at that and see exactly what's happening weather-wise. I think it's fascinating. Weather, you know, being a pilot, you know, I used to teach flying. It's always fascinating to see what the weather's going on. This is also the day before 9/11, and I think, you know, I see a lot of memories, a lot of things that are happening on the various media out there, and I like to think that we hopefully did a little more in questioning. What happened with the buildings at a time when people might say, "Well, it's the wrong time. It's very sensitive, you know, to the people that lost, you know, and it, you know, lost folks and lost loved ones in 9/11." It is absolutely. I understand that, but in the same way, I also think that we need to understand what happened, and we need to ask questions. And unfortunately, one of the best times to do that is when people are directed and focused on that event. And there are just certain things that don't make sense to me. And we're going to get to those as time goes by. We have so many things going on. I got Gene on the line. Gene's on location. Gene's on special assignment from an undisclosed place. And when she comes back from her field assignment, we'll get her back on the board. Hey, Gene, what's going on?
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Yes. And it should be an interesting show today.
Well,
we've lots going on. With just,
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's hard to believe 9/11 is 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I tell people the days are long, but the years are short. You know, you think about it, it's kind of weird, but yeah.
So true. Yeah.
You know, and you're sitting on the job there waiting for your quitting time. You know, that's long. It's a long time. But you know, then you look back and you know, hey, and then you look at some event. Damn, that was 5 years ago. How did that happen? You know, and I think what happens as we get older, which we all do, hopefully, is that each year represents a smaller portion of the time you've been alive. You know, when you're 5 years old, a year is a long time because you don't have a whole lot to judge it by. It's 20% of your life. But when you're 50, it's right. 10% of your, you know, what is a year? It's like 1% or 2% of your life. So my math sucks, but you get the point. The point is that time accelerates. And so this is why you have to maximize it. You have to do whatever it is you want to do. Don't wait. Yeah, do it today. Get started. You know, if you want to, D-Action Radio, you know, as a competition to me, go for it. Don't waste time. Just get out there and just see what happens. Because as the great line in the movie Breaker Morant, you know, live every day as if it were your last. For one day, you're sure to be right. On that happy note.
So very true. Yeah.
We got a special guest today, Donnie Chapman, Donnie Chappie Chapman, to be exact, and a friend of mine, Tammy Prell, who's hopefully going to be calling in as well, is going to be on the show. She's going to be a guest at some point. She's one of the great women shooters of the area here. And so Chappie has Chappie Tactical and Firearms. I'm kind of curious why it's Chappie Tactical and Firearms rather than Chappie Tactical Firearms. We'll ask him. We haven't talked yet, so it's going to be kind of fun. So we've got kind of a local show today. We've got Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial. He's local financial advisor who is our economics guru around here. And Jim Dykes can't make it. So Jim, you know, is on special assignment himself. And so I asked Tammy to fill in, and Tammy couldn't do that. So she introduced me to Donnie Chapman, which is going to be great because I'm hoping to get, you know, the Action Radio Gun Club, you know, where we all go out to the range and we kind of, talk about stuff and maybe get some lobbyists there. Who knows what's going to happen? But if nothing else, we're building a continual network here that gets larger and larger all the time, you know, and I'm going to talk to Donnie about this too, but it's fascinating that we can talk about guns here. It's one of the freedoms that people don't really realize, just the ability to talk about guns and what you might buy, what you might get for your self-protection, what you might be competing with. Most people in the world, in fact, almost every other country, they can't do that. I think us, Switzerland, and Israel is about it in terms of that. But it's just, you know, it's one of those things people take for granted. And all the folks in Washington want to do in various states is take that away. Is it, what the hell is your problem? Anyway, if you want to react to that, I got my first special guest on the line right now. So gun stuff. Gene, are you in a place where you can or want to carry a concealed weapon for your self-defense? I don't know if we've ever talked about that. And you don't have to answer. It's a personal thing. But since I asked, it's up to you.
It's nothing I ever wanted to do. I get the importance of it and stuff like that, but I just never wanted to have a gun. But okay. Nowadays, especially where I'm at now, compared to where I had been at, it's probably would need one more here than there. Not right here, but I mean, in this state, just because of all the just lunacy that's going on.
You must be in a liberal state.
It has to do with
people.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And it's not even that. It's the governor that's no common sense.
Oh.
So.
Well, isn't that a requirement in a liberal state?
No.
Sorry.
It's just that they don't have common sense. And so, you know, it's better for you to, protect yourself. And, well, I'll just say it. I'm in Minnesota right now. And the big thing in Minneapolis is they're voting about changing the police. And with what happened last year with just George Floyd and all that mess and all the destruction and the lives lost, nothing's ever said about that, you know, except for him, the martyr, the saint he was, which is such a lie. You know, no, his death should not have happened, but what they're doing is insane. That's just what I believe. So,
you're defunding the police and funding the criminals. You've got it backwards.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, even though I never thought of having a gun, it would probably be a very wise thing. But I think for anybody, you take in your own life, your own responsibility for your life in your own hands, because even if you live anywhere and you call the police, how long is it going to take them to get there? Longer than... You have maybe moments to live if someone's pointing a gun in your face.
Yep. Yeah. The
and
old thing is why
crime happens anywhere.
Yeah. I'm gonna hold you up just a little bit because we got our first guest on the line. But the old saying that, you know, why do you carry a gun? Well, because a police officer is too heavy. Sorry, I couldn't resist. My tendency to add humor to all our even our serious situations. I got a friend of mine on the line, which I'm probably going to mispronounce her name horribly. And I don't know if we got both folks or just one. Kelly Schimmel-Swart. Kelly, how did I do this morning? Am I even close?
You did good. Thank you. Yes, you're very close,
there we
actually.
Go. So Kelly is half of K&B Cafe, Billy being the other half. And these are friends of mine. You know, I don't get to their cafe anywhere near enough. It's right here in downtown Milton. It's in the corner of Willing and Caroline Street. You know, sort of diagonally across kind of from my favorite Imogene Theater, across from the courthouse, and part of the renaissance of beautiful downtown Milton on the banks of the Blackwater River that is going to be, as it gets going with more and more places and what I hope is a fabulous marketplace and restaurant gourmet delight, you know, across the street from you guys, plus the Blackwater bands on the Blackwater concerts, the free concerts on Friday nights, which are starting up. So many incredible things are happening right here in Milton. This is the place to be. And you guys have done a wonderful job. They've got this incredible shop. It's got a cafe upstairs. It's got like a leather, you know, shop downstairs, these beautiful jackets and things. They've got records, you know, vinyl, real vinyl, folks, you know, and they've got clothes, secondhand, I don't know, secondhand or new stuff or a little bit of everything. Why don't you tell us? It's an amazing place. Then we'll talk about the flea market thing. Yeah. So tell me about your place.
Well, we're K&B Home Etc. and Cafe. We do have vinyl records. We have a whole music and media room. We have vintage toys and comics, a big hot wheel wall, which everyone loves that. Mm-hmm. Down in the basement, we have B. Brazzled, who's motorcycle leather and gear. And then we also have Second Fold, who is a men's resale. And then upstairs, we have a woman's boutique and our excellent K&B Cafe.
There we go. See, you said it better than I did. I should have just let you start. It would have made more sense. We're a little bit last minute today because, you know, I contacted Kelly before the show and I said, hey, guys, come on the show. You know, because we talked about this a few days ago when I was having a fabulous lunch in the cafe. And it was just, you know, we talked about it. And then, I don't know, just I got a little bit sidetracked with just because there's so many issues going on. I got a special guest today. There's a million issues I want to cover, but I'm not going to get to. I'm going to save them for next week. But Fridays are kind of like fun around here. I like to lighten things up, as a lot of folks do, because, you know, all work and no play makes life very boring. All serious issues, you know, can really sort of drag you down. So we have an event which you are part of, which goes across, what, the whole top of Florida? What's going on?
It's just called the Fleas Across Florida. So, well, first of all, you said we have the bands on Blackwater tonight. It's going to be the Will Thompson Band. That's from 7 to 9. We'll also be open late. And then tomorrow we're having a vintage street market from 8 to 4. We have several people coming to that. We have the Bunny Hutch Nonprofit, Casey Green Music. We have Froze Gourmet Popsicles. We have the Snowbiz Shaved Ice. We have Face Paint, Hello Kitty walking around with pictures. B. Brad's The Second Fold, KMB. We'll all be there with some dollar tent sales.
Okay.
So it's going to be actually a really fun event.
Wow. No mask, no vaccine requirements?
September 11th. No.
Have to include that.
Just have fun.
This is Milton, folks. You know, one of the things I love about being here is the fact that this is, I think, one of the first cities that specifically turned down a mask mandate. You don't have to get political. You're in business. But, I mean, you can if you want to, but I want to give you the option. I do. That's my job. But when Milton had the Mardi Gras parade last year, and it was in the middle of mask mandates and people were condemning our town saying, oh, you can't do this, you know, you super spreaders, you evil, horrible, you know, and we're like, you people are idiots. You don't know any of the facts. You don't know the science. The science you believe is wrong, and you're accepting it like idiots. You know, just taking it all in and you're living your lives in fear. And we had this great parade and they were tossing, you know, Mardi Gras, you know, favors and like these necklace things and hats and silly stuff. And the bands were playing on trucks. We had a blast. Okay. So while the rest of you people are locked down with your stupid moronic governors and mayors who, you know, are following the orders of the CDC that aren't orders, we're having a party down here. Okay. So if you want to have some fun, come to Milford. Right. And you know, it's ironic. Right. Think about the gun stuff I was talking about earlier. We're doing things that a lot of the country can't do. And I want to take it for granted, but I want to tell you that you can do it too. You just have to have the will to do it and the people to do it. And we have both the will and the people here in Milton to claim our freedom. And now we're going to – who came up with that ridiculous name, Fleas Across Florida? That's disgusting.
That's why I chose Vintage Street Market.
Okay. That makes sense. So it's a flea market. It's an antique thing. Do you know how this – there's like a big chain of stores, I think, all across Florida. Do you know how this works? I mean, I've heard about this thing.
Well, it's all across 90. It's called Fleas Across Florida, and it's all down 90. I know it's at least from Milton and Jacksonville, and it was on the news this morning, and they talked a lot about it. It's also on our Facebook page at KMB Home, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Yeah, and for those who don't know, Milton's at one end of the top of Florida. Jacksonville's at the other, so it's not like they're next door to each other. You know, they're, what, about a couple hundred miles apart, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
How far is it? Do you know? I mean, just I could do my GPS thing, but I know it's a big distance. Yeah. Okay. Well, this is cool.
There's a lot of good finds out there, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, this is very cool. So what's on special today?
Our special today at K&B Cafe is a London broiled French dip with au jus, side, and drink for $11. Going to be awesome.
Oh, I love shameless plugs. That's so good. Jeannie, you hungry yet? I know you just had breakfast, but Jean?
Yes. Yeah. For sure.
See all the fun we have down here? Jean's up in Minnesota.
Good.
Yeah, Gene's our producer on location today. So, yeah. Okay, Gene, do you have any questions for Kelly about our cool little stuff going on here?
No, but it sounds really awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Very
I
cool.
wish I was there to take part.
Well, it's going to be fun. I'm going to check it out tomorrow. I've got band practice tomorrow, so I can't stay all day. I have my own band, Starfish, which I'll have on the show at some point. You know, the benefits of having your own radio show is you get to shamelessly promote your own band. So we'll be doing the beach circuit here maybe the next month or so. We're just kind of finalizing and finishing up and getting our act ready to go. So that's very exciting. Hopefully we'll be playing bands on the Blackwater maybe next spring. That'll be exciting. Anything else you want to add to this, Kelly? Sounds good.
Nope, everyone, just have a great day. It's going to be a beautiful day in Milton, so come out and enjoy it.
Yeah. How do we reach you guys? Do you have a Facebook page or a website or something?
We have Facebook. We have a website. We have Instagram. Is it KMB Home, et cetera, and Cafe?
Okay. Sounds good to me. Thanks, Kelly. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. And join us
Bye-bye.
Anytime. Tell us the specials. We should have every Friday morning have her on. Make ourselves really hungry, right? She'll say, you know, London broil? Oh, damn. I have to go to work later. All right. Yeah, that's how it goes around here. But on a serious side, there are things happening down here. And, you know, I'll give this to Kelly to be able to listen to it later. Let me do my Milton. I made something for Milton. And he made it for the Chamber of Commerce and for the folks here in the businesses that really sort of talks about our towns. It's only a couple of minutes. I'm going to play this. And then we can get more in the serious issues. I'm scrolling madly away down here, vamping. I don't know how it happened. All these extra things got suddenly put in my sound things, all the ones I rejected way back when. Where's Milton? I got to organize this. Gene, this is one of the things we have to do. We have to organize our promos. There it is. Okay, good. Yeah, I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis, creator of Action Radio, for my town, Milton, Florida. Milton, it's where I live. It's where you can live, too. It's where you can bring a new business, especially a business that helps our downtown historic district. We have everything in Milton. We have the Blackwater River. We have the Imogene Theater, built in 1912 and still booking national acts. We have Scoops Ice Cream. We have Boomerang's Restaurant, where I get my favorite Thai chicken pizza. We have an outdoor stage for music acts and free concerts by the river. The Blackwater Bistro will keep you in steak and seafood indefinitely. We have brew pubs creating great craft beers and giving us all a place to relax and talk. But it's more than just stuff and food and buildings. It's people. Remember the show Cheers, where everybody knows your name? It's that kind of place. So if you're tired of the cities, of the traffic, the frenetic pace of life that doesn't seem to get you anywhere, if you want a small city that has incredible potential, that combines the best of historic buildings and modern, fun, small retail shops and restaurants, and a great waterfront, plus who knows what for the future, take a look at historic Milton, Florida, in the Panhandle, near Pensacola, and the world's greatest beaches on the Emerald Coast of the Gulf of Mexico. Milton is going through a renaissance. Maybe you can be part of making it happen. See, now y'all can come down here and have some fun. That's what we do. So it's, I made that. This one of the things I did before I started the radio show was took a production course at a small college in California before I came out here. Ohlone College, I'll give them a plug too. And so if you have a dream, if you something you want to do, go back to school. You know, I did. I was like 56 years old. You know, went back and found this little college, took these radio production courses, and I can do all this really cool stuff now for the show. You never know where these skills are going to come in handy, because I originally thought I was going to have to start in radio as a producer and work my way up to getting my own show, but I was fortunate enough to find small station here in Florida, one of the last great independent radio stations, not part of the big, you know, Cumulus, iHeart, whatever the other networks are, Salem, and was able to get going, so that's kind of cool. All right, we've got a little bit of time, so today I'm kind of improvising around a little bit. We've got Derek at the bottom of the hour, and got just this way too many stories to cover. Let me start with this one here. This one's going to shock you a little bit. It's from Natural News, and the thing about Natural News is you can't put anything from Natural News on Facebook or social media. It's immediately rejected, and you're immediately banned. It's that serious. They just do not want this information on. It's by Mike Adams. This was written September 8th, so just a couple days ago. It's got Fauci bioweapons funding confirmed. Smoking gun proves COVID vaccines based on government bio warfare program. Okay, so this is the part of COVID that's not talked about as much. You know, you get Fox News and things, Newsmax, and even One American News to a lesser extent. They do get more into it. But if you really want the full extent of what's going on, you got to go to a source like Natural News or Children's Health Defense, which is Robert Francis Kennedy's organization, Jr. It's just, well, the stuff you know about, the gain of function, everybody's talking about that. The fact that the newly released documents, you know, proved that it was going to Wuhan. Okay, we know that. All right. Let's talk about the stuff that we don't know about. And so part two of this article, it says bombshell. The U.S. government started this as a MERS, that's Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, bioweapons program to mass murder people in the Middle East, but it was switched to murdering Americans when Trump took power. Okay. That's quite a headline. All right. There's a lot to that. So again, question it. Think about it, go, wait a minute. You know, I look at this skeptically too, but at least having access to the information gives us the option to consider these things. It says the other huge bombshell now emerging from all this is that it appears the U.S. government was originally planning to deploy its bioweapons as a MERS, and that's Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome virus, to mass murder political enemies in Iran and other nations under President Clinton. That would be Hillary, you know, who was slated to take office in 2017 after the 2016 election was rigged. But when Trump's military intelligence white hats blocked the election rigging of 2016, which makes you wonder why they didn't do it in 2020, and Trump took office, the bioweapons program was redirected to focus on killing Americans and dethroning Trump with the coordinated COVID-rigged election scheme of 2020. That's quite a mouthful. So let me bring Gene back in here. Gene, hearing that for the first time, what's your reaction? I'm just curious.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
And what's the amazing part is this isn't even talked about on hardly any news source. And I can't share it. I literally cannot share it. That's why Wednesdays I called it the Not Ready for Facebook Vaccine Report. Let me get the next paragraph here, and we'll see. And if anybody wants to call in real quick before we get to the bottom of the hour. And you're welcome to talk to Derek as well, too, with our financial stuff. But 215-383-3832. Mike Adams.
It's just amazing
that
we don't know the truth, that the truth in this country is so buried now.
Mm-hmm.
Or all the facts, put it that way, so people can make logical decisions and, you know, have a good understanding.
Yeah. The problem is the truth is available, but most people don't want to look. And the truth is out there in the foreign press. You know, I had a story from India yesterday on the Afghani constitution. What'd you think of yesterday's show? I mean, the things that we're talking about with Claire Lopez about the Afghan constitution and how our State Department sold out our military and created a situation where we couldn't win was both heartbreaking, shocking, and disgusting all at the same time. That was quite a show.
And the thing is that the people, the Americans that were involved in writing it they knew what was going on. They knew that what the American people were given as far as what we were told as to why we were there or continuing to be there was just a bunch of BS. And just the soldiers and their families, their lives, you know, they didn't put their lives on the line. Some died, and some of the families and servicemen are never going to be the same again. That's the sad part.
Yeah, the conflict for me is I know they have to know, but I don't want to, but I know it's going to be a shock to them. And I don't want, as Claire said, you know, we're not trying to denigrate or in any way put down the American soldier. I mean, like I said, God bless them for going and serving their country. The problem is I don't think, you know, that they were allowed to serve their country in the way that they thought they were. And that contradiction. You know, it drives me crazy. But we need to get that out there so that it doesn't happen again. So we do analyze the State Department and put their sorry asses on trial, which is what really needs to happen. If you want to find traitors in the U.S. government, the first place you start is the State Department. All right, next paragraph here. Go ahead. Yeah. Okay. He says, so the bioweapons that the U.S. government originally planned to dump on the people of the Middle East ended up being refocused on SARS-CoV. Okay. Before there was a SARS-CoV-2, folks, you know, COVID-19, there was a SARS-CoV, which then became SARS-CoV-1. All right. And placed into vaccines to be injected into soldiers and the 200 plus million American citizens carry out mass genocide against the American people and its active duty defenders. Okay. He says, all along, Fauci, who we call Dr. Fascist around here, was taking orders from the Obama-Clinton cartel, which had sought a seamless transition of power to the Clinton regime, but was thwarted by the outpouring of popular support for Trump. Okay, I don't hold with the mass genocide. I think these people, I think if people, you know, die on a fairly large scale, I don't think they care. I think this is about power and money, and mostly money. It's about money for Dr. Fascist, because that's all he does. Is generate money for himself through royalties and licensing fees and by owning patents to both the vaccines and the viruses themselves, which you're not supposed to be able to do, but apparently he's doing it. I don't see how mass genocide would make any sense from a purely marketing perspective, because you're losing all your customers. I think this is akin to the smoking, the tobacco industry. Tell me if you like this analogy, Gene, that, you know, whereas the tobacco industry, you know, they killed off their best customers. You know, I mean, I'm sort of laughing a little bit because of the tragedy, but that's the thing. Nothing good comes from smoking. I mean, nothing. And so they have to generate new customers all the time. That's why, you know, the old chocolate cigarettes when we were kids and the great slick ads that have gone and things like that. And smoking is down, and it should be. And that's a wonderful thing. Now they're selling to China and everywhere else. But the point is that they didn't care how many people they killed as long as they could sell their product, but they couldn't kill off the whole population or they wouldn't have a population to buy their product. I think in the same way with vaccines, this is why they're pushing 1, 2, 3, 4 boosters every 6 months, a daily pill, a twice a daily pill. It's marketing. And some people are going to die, but I think they think of people dying as a necessary but as necessary to create the fear to sell the product. So this is a fear-based product. Okay, so if they sell enough fear through a certain amount of people dying, that's all they need. So the idea that they're trying to kill off the whole country makes absolutely no sense. I'm going to look at it as coldly and as they do. You know, the bean counters, the folks that do the cost benefit analysis. Is it worth fixing this product, or is it cheaper to pay the lawsuits for the people that die? You know, same thing here. Is it worth making the product safe, or is it more important to have the fear that certain people die so everybody else gets it? I think they made the calculation that it's better that a certain amount of people die, you know, some 600,000, real or imagined fudge numbers, I'm not sure. But this generated the fear, and everybody's, you know, a lot of people are diving for this vaccine, but a lot of people aren't. Millions aren't. And they're not able to sell the product because we're not afraid. You know, we either had it, gotten over it, realized that there are treatments, and the truth has gotten to, I think, some 80 million Americans out of 330 have not touched this thing. That's a pretty big group. You know, in fact, I think that's about the same amount as Trump voters. Have you noticed that? There's about 88 million Trump voters, and I think it's about 80-some-odd million people haven't taken the vaccine. What a coincidence. I didn't think of that till just now. But do you hold with the genocidal thing, Gene, or do you think it's more marketing, which is where I am? And you don't agree with me.
I don't know. I think it's a combination of both, because I think Bill Gates has stuff to do with it and a few other people as well. But the sad thing is I just was texting someone last night. Her and her husband and her mother have it. And her husband was supposed to have ivermectin, and he can't get it filled. And how sad is that? Why? Because the powers that be in this country are saying it doesn't work. And it's like, well, the bottom line is this, regardless if it works or not, it's not up for them to decide, because I know people that used it and it worked on. So why can't they at least allow him to use it to see if it works for him?
I'll tell you why. Because by FDA law, for an emergency use authorization, which all these vaccines are still under, and they're not vaccines. I say that out of convenience so people understand. These are messenger RNA spike protein infusion devices. They are not vaccines. All right. But the reason they do that is the FDA law says in order to get an emergency use authorization, there cannot be another, you know, substitute, less expensive, more effective. There can't be anything else. It's the only thing that's available. And that's how they grant the authority under an emergency, because, well, it's an emergency. People are going to die if we don't do this. All right. The problem is that there are viable alternatives to vaccines, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, you know, your immune boosters, vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, the stuff we talk about all the time, zithromycin to prevent pneumonia, the things we've talked about since March 2nd of 2020. We haven't changed our stance on this one bit. But they can't have those, because if you have those, that means there's no need for the vaccine. And if there's no need for the vaccine, then their whole marketing scheme and Trump destruction scheme falls apart. That's why they had to demonize them. That's why they had to ban them, because that's what the FDA law says. And they weren't going to change the law. Now, of course, I had an FDA overhaul bill that I wrote with Dr. Zelenko. We can change the law. That's the solution. You know, so we've already got the solution, and we've had it. It's at writeyourlaws.com, and we're going to be working on that. But that's the thing. Anyway, let me go to the last part here, which I found the most fascinating. We've got a couple of minutes left before Derek joins us. It says vaccines are the first step in a binary weapon system that has yet to be fully deployed. Okay, binary. Think of the vaccine. Think of a binary system as like epoxy. Okay, you got two chemicals that by themselves don't do anything. They just sit in the tube. They're inert. But when you mix them together, they form this amazing bond, and they react and they harden in just a few seconds, few minutes, whatever they're set to do. And they're nothing without each other, but together they have a completely different effect. That's what a binary weapon is. It's like a nerve gas. You got two cylinders of a nerve gas. By themselves, they don't really do anything. But when they combine together, they're lethal. Okay, so the article that Mike Adams says, and this does actually make sense to me. He says, finally, the vaccines are not designed to kill people immediately upon being injected. Otherwise, the whole program would fail, right? Marketing scheme? Think marketing scheme all the time. He says they're actually designed to impair the immune system and prime the body to overreact to a future release of a viral variant that sends the body into immune reaction overdrive. This is the key. This is how it all makes sense. All right, let me read this part again. The vaccines are actually designed to impair the immune system. That's why people are getting sick from the variants. That Israeli study, you're 27 more times likely to get sick from COVID if you have the vaccine, 13 more times likely to die. This is why. The vaccine is designed to impair your immune system. Why? To sell more vaccines. Okay. If your immune system worked on the first shot, you wouldn't be able to sell the second, third, fourth shot, fifth shot booster, twice a daily pill. This is a self-perpetuating scheme. It makes you sick, so you need more of it. The flu shot works exactly the same way. The flu shot systematically lowers your resistance to flu every year, and then you need an ever stronger shot, which costs the insurance companies more money because they make it free to you, I think. And that's how it works. So let me keep going this a little bit, then I'm going to get back to Gene. And, of course, anybody else has a question. There's a lot of stuff going on here. All right. They're actually designed – let me start back a bit. They're designed to impair the immune system and prime the body to overreact to a future release of a viral variant that sends the body into immune reaction overdrive. This is called antibody-dependent enhancement. And for it to be fully invoked, a new variant must be introduced and circulated that evades the antibodies produced by the current vaccines – what we would call COVID vax, 1.0, it appears that the Delta variant has already achieved somewhere around a 65% evasion, but upcoming variants will demonstrate even stronger evasion and escape properties. He says the real bombshell is that the same Fauci, Daszak, Barak bioweapons program that built SARS-CoV-2, because it's human engineered, it's not naturally occurring, SARS-CoV-2 could have already constructed a radical variant that functions as a second part in the binary weapon system. This new variant, perhaps one that's already released or soon to be released into the wild, would result in mass fatalities of those who took COVID vaccines, even if they survived the more immediate vaccine adverse reactions, such as blood clotting and heart attacks. Gene?
Seems that interesting, especially since what Biden did yesterday. It's so sad that they're all for the vaccine, but they don't know the truth about it.
We're going to talk about that too. The whole idea. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, I was just going to say that. And that's frustrating because nothing is reported as far as how many people are in the hospital that have had the vaccine, how many people have died because of getting the vaccine. But no, it's all focused on people that don't have the vaccine. And regardless if they make it mandatory or not, some cannot ever get the vaccine because of health issues. And so what are they always just vilified as horrible people? It's like whatever happened to your choice, your body, your choice.
That only counts in abortions, and then it's somebody else's body and some other father. It's a scary situation. We'll talk about that, too. In fact, the Biden insurrection, they're suing Texas, over constitutional rights, they say, at the same time as taking them away at every other possible place they can. It's really ironic. Anyway, Derek's on the line. I don't want to take up his time because his time is limited. And let's play his theme, and we're going to talk money.
Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money.
Yeah, nothing happened in money. The market's stable. The Federal Reserve is doing just fine. There's no inflation. Everything's great, right? God, Derek, it's been a while. Let's see if we can get caught up here and fill us in on the situation. If you want to start with the economic report, then we can get into some of the details. And again, feel free to bring up topics that you want. I should probably make this more clear to everybody because I always have questions. That's never a problem. But the question is, I want to make sure I cover what you guys want to cover. So feel free. So how you doing, sir? First of all, and then let's launch into our report.
Doing good. So we'll talk about the economy here in just a moment.
Okay.
All right. Well, hey, this is Derek Park of Edward Jones bringing you the daily financial market report. While equity markets briefly rose earlier in the day, they closed lower for the fourth day in a row, despite a better-than-expected initial job claims report. The financial sector was the only sector to gain, while real estate led losses. European stocks trimmed early losses after European Central Bank announced a slowdown in asset purchases amid higher-than-expected inflation. Shares of gaming and education companies based in China continued to slide, leading major Asian indices lower. The U.S. 10-year yield was slightly lower today, remaining range-bound for much of the second quarter 2021. Oil seems to have found resistance at $70 and hovered right around $68 mark. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 162 points or 0.43 to 34,879. NASDAQ index closed down 38 points or 0.25 to 15,248. And the S&P 500 index closed down in the bond market. The 10-year Treasury yield was trading at 1.3%, lower by 0.04. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was down $1.31 or 1.89% to $67.99. And the spot price of gold was up $4.20 or 0.23 to $17.97.70. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
I have to take speed writing. I try to get as much done as I can to talk about, but it's interesting. I want to start with the jobs report this morning because there's this this very strange misperception, I think, in the Biden insurrection that they seem to be shocked that the jobs aren't improving. Of course, I'm not shocked at all. Their economy sucks. But they seem to – and they take claim – they claim credit for when the job situation improves, but they're talking about an artificial lockdown job situation. So millions of people were put out of work by, you know, governor dictators, mayor dictators, people who decided that their job wasn't essential. So small businesses, all kinds of businesses were locked down where the government offices kept going and the big businesses, of course, did just fine. But all these folks that lost their jobs were counted as job losses, but they really weren't. Those jobs were taken away by government. And then when the economy becomes unlocked, and they get these job, those aren't job gains. Those aren't jobs being created. Those are jobs being restored. So you're actually getting back to where you were. You're not creating anything new. And yet they're taking that, it's the double thing that's going on. They're taking those as job increases, which they aren't. And they're trying to claim credit that they're actually creating jobs when they're actually just restoring them. What's going on with what's being talked about as far as the jobs report goes, and how does that affect the markets?
So the way they look at it is, are people getting back to work? I mean, they don't get caught really, or the market doesn't get caught in the politics of, you know, just like you said, I mean, it is true. You know, I mean, really, when you shut things down and then you fill it back up, it's mm-hmm. not anything new. It's just getting back to the way things were, mm-hmm. you know, and we're still not there. The bottom line is, you know, the some of the moratorium on jobs and things doesn't end until October 1st. So what you're going to see October 1st, I mean, that's the drop dead deadline now. You know, even the Supreme Court said they're not going to make any changes to that. That's it. We're moving forward. You know, October
so what happens
1st,
then?
All these people,
what
October
happens
1st, all
first?
These people, the moratorium on the mortgage is officially ended and evictions
okay.
can begin for one. Two, that's when all the money for the labor market shuts down. All the
stimulus?
The unemployment and all the extra benefits that you're getting, all that stuff shut off October 1st.
I thought that ended already. I guess not. Okay.
No. It's been extended. So, you know, all
okay.
these people that complain they can't find a job, watch the scramble begin.
well, now,
you know,
see,
I find it comical, but, you know, I'm kind of curious, you know, what the reports are going to start looking like end of October, you know, where they're like, oh, major surge in job market. You know, it's like,
no,
you know,
I think
that could be very positive. So what we're going to have is a job market that's going to be doing well or improving significantly with a housing market that's going to be taking a little bit of a hit because that's when the evictions can begin. You know, so
well, except that evictions are a way to preserve housing. You know, some people don't think about this. They always look at it from the point of view of you know, especially, what's her name? Who's that? Cory Burke. Is it Cory Burke? Cory, whatever her name is, the congresswoman who camped out on the Capitol steps saying, if the people are going to be evicted, I'm going to sleep out here and just prove how bad it is to be homeless. You know, it's not my responsibility to pay your rent. Okay, I pay my own rent. Thank you. I don't have to pay your rent. Just in the same way, it's not my responsibility to get a vaccine to protect you. You protect you. Leave me
right.
the hell alone. This
right.
is what America's all about. And so this idea that the CDC... You know, they're not the Center for Direct Control. They're allegedly the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. I don't think they either control it or prevent it. Apparently, they're advancing it by everything they're doing. But that's not the point. The point is the CDC has no regulatory authority to ban evictions. First point. Second point, evictions preserve rental space because they kick out the squatters. They kick out the people that can't pay. If you force people, if you force landlords to keep people in their property that they paid for, and they still have, you know, bank mortgages to pay and property tax and everything else on that property. If you force them to keep squatters who aren't paying rent and they lose that property, then the good folks that do pay rent have fewer choices in rental property and rental property goes up. How am I doing?
So that's true. And then also, you know, you're talking about the mortgage moratorium ending. So anybody who has government subsidized mortgages, you know, they can begin foreclosure process. So you have evictions and foreclosures all happening at once. And then you have a lot of people who didn't want to work, who couldn't pay for them, you know. So, you know, while they come, they're going to start working, you know, with rising costs. I mean, I just heard a story from somebody in the area that the house that they rented, you know, they transitioned this house to a friend of theirs, you know, so they could go buy a house. And then the people, when they transitioned it to the friend, raised their rent 30% because average houses in the area, you know, were getting that. So, I mean, their rent went up 30%. And I mean, this number, you know, I mean, I think is ridiculous for the area that we live in. You know, but I mean, they're getting it. So, you know, why not? You know, if you want a house, don't get a house. I mean, I talked to another one and, you know, I mean, they've got 30 rental applications for one house when it opens up.
Wow.
So they can be very selective, you know, people offering more money because they're looking for a place to live.
Yeah.
You know, right now it's kind of scary.
Well, now when you say that they transitioned the house, did they give it to another person? Did somebody else owned it? Or are you saying that a friend, you know, they left their house and there's another property owner. And so they left the house, their friends moved in and the landlord raised the rent 30%. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what happened.
So there's are there any guidelines? I don't believe in rent control because that's the same thing that eliminates rental property, you know, because now you've immediately lowered the ability of landlords to make money. I don't mind landlords making money. However, you know, 30%, that's a pretty steep raise. So, yes, the market bears it, but is there any guidelines or continuity where you can only raise the rent, say, 10% for a tenant or 20% or something like that?
I don't know the answer to that. I literally heard that story yesterday.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Like,
Yeah, because California was strict about that.
Yeah, I think the raising has to be in limitations of what the market is doing. You know what I mean? Like, is there similar houses with, you know, getting the same rent?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know what the other rules apply. You know, but thought that was a little ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, how they do it in California, I think I forgot what the percentage is, but they can only raise the rent a certain amount per year. But once you move out, they can set the rent anything they want for the next person. So that's how they do it. So when someone moves,
and I
then,
think
then
that's
they,
what just
you know,
happened.
Yeah. Okay. And actually that's, you know, that's the market. If that's what the market is bearing. So the real problem here is the folks are not, the county commission and the city council aren't managing the growth properly because they're letting so many people come in that it's artificially raising the prices of everything. It's going to raise the cost of our infrastructure. It's going to raise our taxes. And the whole point of being here is a low cost of living, a high quality of life. You know, good conservative friends for the most part. I mean, this is why I left California. I did not bring California with me. Obviously, listen to the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the whole, you know, it's like they're taking the very things that make this area so wonderful, you know, are in danger of going because they're not managing the growth properly. That's where the real problem is, I think.
Right.
Hmm.
Well, you know, when you, you know, have people that are mismanaging the infrastructure, I mean, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's happening at a massive rate in this area. Which I think is terrible. You know, I mean, when you have the county commissioners that are involved in poor shady deals, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, I mean, I know a couple situations that things were promised and then, you know, once the housing was approved, those plans were scrapped.
And, how about that?
You know, it's,
politics
it's
as usual. Yeah. Well, this is something I pretty much guarantee you can't comment on, but I want to mention it now anyway. And that's the fact that Action Radio, along with Santa Rosa Volunteers, has sponsored a bill that is actually looked upon pretty favorably right now by our county commission to make Santa Rosa County an illegal alien-free zone. And this will be done with asset forfeiture. We're not going to round anybody up. You know, we're not going to be taking over the federal authority. We're not going to be our own little ICE, you know, immigration service here. But it's asset forfeiture, which is a normal law enforcement procedure for taking the property that's involved in a criminal operation. And that would be like houses and cars and things like that, and businesses that hire illegal aliens. And we're going to have the signs out front, you know, welcome to Santa Rosa County. This is an illegal alien free zone, just like you drive to Berkeley. This is where I got the idea from. You drive through Berkeley, California, you know, nuclear free zone. There's no nuclear anything here. Except that half the scientists that work at the Lawrence Livermore Labs, you know, the National Nuclear Facility, they live in Berkeley, okay? Because the houses are gorgeous when you get up on the hill. So it may be this egalitarian campus down below of, you know, socialism and Marxism, but you get up in the hills and they're capitalists, trust me. But the contradictions fascinate me. But anyway, but that's what's going on here. And part of managing the growth is making sure that the stowaways that were on our airplanes coming out of Afghanistan, that is part of the Biden-Obama relocation program to sabotage the country with America haters, just like they did with the Somali folks up in Minnesota. You know, this is a way for us to guard our county. Hopefully this will catch on with the other counties in Florida and hopefully all across the country. I don't know about you, Gene, up in Minnesota. Something tells me it's not going to work there, but we're going to funnel all the illegal aliens and people that shouldn't, that have no right to be here, that are brought here by the government under stupid programs, you know, to these liberal areas. That's going to change the economy too. You know, I don't, and this is something you can comment on, Derek, is all the folks coming across, you know, our borders, they're going to want jobs. They're going to want benefits. They're going to be taking a lot. And has the market noticed that? Is that being taken into account? Are people hiring people under the table to get their work done? Is there any news of this mass, you know, invasion that's taken over our country right now? Has that shown up in the markets?
Not
or the
yet.
Chatter?
You know, okay. So I haven't seen
Why not?
Anything. I mean, I'm not, you know, I mean, it's if there's no economic reports happening, you know, okay, saying that it's having an impact, then why would the market react to it?
I don't know. I have this assumption, probably wrongly, that they're curious. You know, that they look ahead, that they're not just measuring, that they're not all quantitative. They're part investigational, that they, as I do on the show here, look ahead to, you know, to forecast, don't they?
That's analyst jobs. But I mean, analyst jobs use the reports that are given. You know what I mean? So,
okay.
They can do research on it, but if there's no research on it because nobody wants to look at it, then, I mean, all they're doing is making a speculation, which some things that we do are speculative.
Okay.
You know, but speculative would be considered the high end of risk. You know, you know, is it happening? Sure. I mean, I'll agree that it's happening. It's economic terrorism. You know, but is it to the point that it's affecting things? You know, that's really hard to look at. That's what I see.
Yeah. Speaking of economic terrorism, let's talk about the spending that's going on right now. I think one of the bills got held up. I'm not sure how many trillions they're wasting at this point, but we've got a Congress of idiots, or they're so bought and paid for that they've given up any pretense of serving the country and are just serving themselves. Has the stimulus and the trillions of dollars that have gone into the so-called infrastructure, which are really social welfare programs, has that shown up as a problem? I know it's causing inflation. We'll talk about that next.
Not yet. I mean, I find it interesting, though, that, you know, during the last administration, everybody was like, oh, you know, he's going to run the country into the ground financially. And freaking, you know, the new administration's out there with a checkbook just whipping checks all over the place. And it's like, mm-hmm. Where are they getting this money from? You know what I mean? Like,
well, let's talk about where they're getting the money from. And you can't say Biden, you know, administration on the show. It's just a little caution I have, because until the ongoing investigations are over, you know, he's still not president as far as I'm concerned and never will be, because we know we stole the election. My view, not Derek's. That's just, I want to get that out there. But inflation, when you spend that much money, it has to be accounted for somehow. So can you kind of trace us through the printing and borrowing that's going to cover these massive stimulus and infrastructure expenditures? I think people would find that instructive.
Well,
how does it work?
I mean, the borrowing is probably where it's going to come from, because,
okay,
I mean, the printing, if they keep printing, inflation's going to run out of control. So, you know, I mean, eventually, inflation, you know, is they're starting to say is not transitory, which they should have been saying from the beginning.
What's that mean?
You know, inflation's going to be here. Say again.
What's transitory for our new economic folks out there?
Yeah. So transitory basically means that it's only temporary and that everything should go back to normal. But when you have people that are not working and boosting the economy, and you have the cost of goods and services that are rising because of shortages and because of, you know, manufacturing delays and many other things, and supply shortages because of work, of course you're going to have inflation. I mean, it's going to happen. It's kind of written on the wall. You know, so what the government was basically saying is, you know, this should be temporary. Everything should get back to normal. Well, now the thermometer of, yeah, this is probably here for at least another year kind of thing. You know, the government's going to have to react to that. How do they react to that? They can slow down the printing of money, which they should have done a long time ago, which basically that's called tightening the money supply. And then two, you know, while they have tapered, they've started tapering the purchases or buybacks of bonds and things that are out there, right? That's another thing that they can do. That's commonly referred to as the taper tantrum that's going on. You know, that's where they think the inflation's really coming from.
From the borrowing, the
bonds?
And
then the next thing is, the next thing they can do is start raising interest rates, right?
Yeah.
So if the Fed raises interest rates, what they do is incentivize people to put money back in savings programs, right? Because rates start to raise, people want to start earn money on their money. You know, they're going to have to do a combination of these. They're going to have to either do them in succession, one behind one another. There's going to have to be multiple things that are done. And it's going to take a year for anything to ever really react to what's happening, because everything they do is a lagging indicator. Transitory is not here. I mean, inflation is here. It's causing a problem. You know, but people right now, surprisingly enough, are still spending.
Well, here's what I think. I think people don't see the connection. They don't, when someone says that we're printing more money, I don't think people have, well, I asked Gene about this too, but people don't have an intrinsic knowledge that if you print more money, people think, oh, there's more money. We're printing more money. That's great. There's more money available. But they don't understand that the more dollars that are out there, and I'm not even completely sure, I don't think any economist really knows how this all works, but if you print more dollars, each dollar becomes worth less. And I don't know how that translates, you know, where people actually realize that the dollar is less somehow and they start raising prices, probably because they can't buy as much and everybody else is raising prices. And it's sort of a market-wide thing. It's like the tide rising all boats or however that works. But I explain it this way, and I've done it before on the show. You know, take a pizza, something I'm fairly familiar with these days. If you have a pizza with 8 slices and you cut those slices in half and now have 16 slices, do you have more pizza? No, you have more slices, but each one's worth less. So now you have to have 2 16 slices of 16 to get the same value as you have with one with 8 slices. Okay. So if you reduce the value of the dollar by making more of them in order for the supplier to get the same value of the money, it requires more dollars to equal the value of the money when it required fewer dollars. That's inflation. You're not inflating the prices, you're inflating the amount of dollars out there. And because there are so many more dollars, each of them being worth less, it requires more of them. So you're not changing the value of the products, you're changing the value of the money. That's what creates inflation. I think people don't have a real gut feeling for how that works. What do you think,
Well,
Eric?
I mean, a good example, an extreme example of something to go look at would be Zimbabwe. And I think I said this before, but...
Yeah, I'll see that one, yeah.
I mean, the guy in 1 year changed the denominations that were up to $100 up to $100 billion in 1 year because, you know, the value of the currency was sinking so fast that they just, you know, and he had access to the printing press. I can't remember the fellow's name, but, you know, he basically just said, okay, I'm just going to keep adding zeros behind this thing. Well, you know, $100 billion was equivalent to like less than one U.S. dollar. It was ridiculous. You know, and they basically let's go ahead and trash the currency. I don't think that's going to happen with us. You know, they would have to start adding zeros behind the denomination. And if that happens, I would tell you I would panic. You know, that would be a sign of worry. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've heard that it doesn't happen. And Gene, if you have a question, I'm going to give you a chance in a minute after my next question here. But I think it doesn't happen. I read this, that because we're the reserve currency for the world, that because U.S. dollars are in so many different countries and so many different economies and so many different markets, it has kind of a stabilizing effect. And it's kind of holding off the inevitable. But if it were a closed U.S. economy where our own dollars were here, with the amount of dollars that are being printed, we would be, you know, in hyperinflation right now. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't, and that does hold water. What I would say is I think our process is a little bit, you know, so like there's only like 11 countries that have bonds and positive yields, right? out of 190 countries, there's only 11 that have bonds that are worth anything. You know,
well,
so and ours are not by far the worst of that. You know, so like who's the best of it is Australia and New Zealand, right? They have the strongest bonds. Who has the highest yield? That'd be China. You know, who has the lowest yield of any of those? I want to say it's Iceland. I'd have to go look at my list again that I have. It's sitting on my desk.
Yeah, too bad. I want
to
go there,
California
too.
People. Yeah.
We should have, an action radio convention in Iceland, too. That'd be kind of cool. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our you know, 30-year bonds average 2% or right at like 1.93, 1.98. You know, I'm kind of rounding the number. You know, Australia and New Zealand stay at about like 2.78, somewhere around in there, and China's at like 3.5. You know, why is this important? Well, it basically says, hey, what are your bonds worth? So every time they print money, they print bonds and they sell them to people. And, you know, like I think we talked about this, the average rate, you know, that we can sustain to pay our bills is up to about 2%. You go over 2% and we have problems paying our bills, which has effect on our credit rating, which has an effect on our bond payments and our bond repayments. You know, so, you know, we can continue to issue these, but if we stop issuing these, you know, and that's what Trump wanted to do. Trump wanted to say, well, let's run our bond value down to zero and bankrupt all the people that owe money. well, you also sink the country in the same time. I'm like, that's like the worst idea possible. Yeah. You know,
that's like forgiving the debt. That's just like a debt. We're just going to wipe out the debt. We're just going to start over. Oh, please.
Right. Yeah, that's pressing the economic reset button. You know?
Yeah, that's
so,
economic
like,
suicide. Yeah.
You know, well, that's something I just disagreed with, you know, and I understand what he was doing. But you know, ideally, that's not to the benefit of the country. You know, I mean, he was really trying to stick it to China because they own over half our debt. You know, and you know, I mean, they've been sticking it to us since the 70s, which I agree with. You know,
ever since Nixon was there. How about that?
What's that?
Ever since Nixon was there.
Yeah.
I wonder what he actually did. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree that we should be taking a tougher stance. Now, I don't agree, you know, at how aggressive he was with it. You know, I mean, ideally what that was doing was causing more harm than good in the market and causing more harm than good, you know, with our relations with the country, you know, so.
Yeah.
You know, again, you know, you can disagree with certain things that leaders do. You don't necessarily trash him. He did have a motive and he is a businessman. You know, I'm not supporting that because, you know, ideally I'm the one that had to react to whatever bad stuff come from that.
Yeah. Interesting. I've got, Donnie on the line, our next guest, and Derek, you're welcome to stick around too, because we're, you know, all of us are kind of local here, except Gene, who's up in Minnesota right now. But we've got, you know, Donnie's in Navarre, has get my title here, Chappie Tactical and Firearms. We're going to talk about that because I think we should all go shooting. I want to get our local folks here. You know, we said like the Action Radio Gun Club. We can go and have some fun. Gene, do you have a question for Derek in the couple minutes we have with him?
Well, Gene, I was just curious as to what the $3 trillion plus thing that Congress wants to push through, if that ever gets through to some extent with the Senate, how do you think that's going to play out in our economy?
Man.
I think we're talking about
that
with the inflation, but yeah.
Yeah, I would say not good because right now, I mean, everything's like not, you know, pushed forward yet. So everybody's kind of like, eh, I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to get shot down in a blaze of glory. You know, but I'm not a fortune teller, but if it does go through, I think panic would set in on how we're going to pay for it. You know, so I think there will be some negative effects that come through the market. Because I mean, that's a big bill. I mean, we're already upside down, you know, what, $24 trillion right now? And we're going to stack on
28 hitting for 30. It's worse than you can possibly imagine. Yeah. I've done shows before on economic treason, and one of the big things is the national debt. And again, this is one of those things I don't think people, you know, and Gene's a great example because unless you're studying this stuff all the time, you know, you hear $30 trillion in debt. That's such a big number. You know, even a trillion is a massive number. People, they don't see it out there. It's like when we were at war in Afghanistan and Iraq, most people didn't see anything. There weren't bombs exploding in our country, you know, other than 9/11, which started this. But we can talk about that in a minute, too. In fact, Donnie Chapman's an Air Force veteran too, so we get this is like Veteran Friday. It's kind of cool, but people, it's like they don't see war, so it's almost like it's not real. That's how Vietnam, I think, went on as long as it did, unless you're personally affected. You know, 20 years of Afghanistan, how many people were really affected? How many people personally saw something blow up, you know, in there, or knew someone who was injured or killed? You know, a lot of people, but the vast majority of the country, I think, was not directly affected, and so they don't see it. National debt's the same thing. You tell people that there's we're heading for a $30 trillion debt, and that money has to be paid off somehow, some way, or our economy at some point is going to self-destruct. They don't know when. The people in Congress hope it doesn't happen during their term. They hope it happens during the next person's term, but it's there. It's like it's the edge of the cliff is coming, and we just don't know when we're going to fall off into it. But I think the national debt, and it keeps, and then Yellen comes on, Janet Yellen says, we have to meet our obligations. We have to increase the debt ceiling to pay our obligations. No, you don't, you stupid moron. You stop your obligations. You stop spending the money, and the debt ceiling will take care of itself. And then you start paying down the debt with an actual constitutional budget, and then that reduces the spending. It's the reduction of spending which cures the national debt, not increasing the national debt. That just perpetuates the problem. That's like somebody who's obese saying the cure is eating more food. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. That's a good way to
put that. I just made that up. Derek, what do you think? Pretty good example.
I like it.
Now, there's inflation for you, okay? And here I am trying to lose weight, too, at the same time. So I should be more conscious of this particular item. But anyway, yeah. That's, you know, it's like saying, well, if you eat more food, it'll take care of it, because that way, you know, it's a smaller percentage of your total economy. It's okay. You can handle it. You know, make your stomach bigger. It'd be like making someone's stomach bigger who's obese. Oh, that'll cure it. See, well, now you got more room in your stomach for more food. What's the problem?
Sewage starts filling up your house, what do you do? Do you fix the sewage problem, or do you raise the roof to hold more sewage?
Yeah, stilts, man. Just put the house up on stilts. So that'll take care of it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Oh, God, that's hysterical. All right. Gene, do you have a last comment on that? I'm gonna do something a little different. I'm going to play Jim's theme, even though Jim's not here, but it gets me in the mood to talk about guns. And so, Derek, of course, you're always welcome to stick around if you want to also. At least you should introduce yourselves to each other. I don't know if you know Donnie. Donnie, I don't know if Donnie's still on mute right now. Donnie, I don't know if you know Derek, but we're all in the area here together. He's in Navarre. You know, you're in Pace. I'm here in Milton. So if you want to look at a map, we're like neighbors. We're like buds here. So we got to go shoot together. Derek, do you ever get out shooting? I don't know if I ever asked you that.
It's been a while. I mean, I've got plenty of good old Second Amendment things.
Me too.
But,
I got to get out too.
Especially cost of ammunition now and, you know, some shortages that we're dealing with.
Yeah. Okay. Gene, do you have a last comment before I get to Donnie? Gene?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Thank you, though. Oh,
no problem. And Donnie, this is Jim Dyke's theme, but it, you know, obviously it's not you, but it gets me in the mood to talk guns. So I'm just going to play it because everybody has Derek has a theme. You know, Jim, I got a theme for you, our producer. We'll work on that in a bit. We had one when she was a life coach. All right, I'll be right back.
Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement, and now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dyke with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio.
And filling in for Jim Dyke, special guest Donnie Chapman. Let's give him a round of applause. See the fun we have here? Welcome to Action Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right. So I don't know if you want to sort of leap into our economic chat. Derek Park's still on the line. And both of you guys are veterans. I think, Derek, you were Army and Donnie was Air Force. But so feel free. And, of course, I always want to set aside if we want to talk Afghanistan, just because of the tragedies that are going on, we can always include that in our conversation as well. But do you want to talk economics for a minute? Anything you heard that sort of shocked you in the last few minutes because you were on, you know, while we were still talking about the debt, national debt and things like that?
Not really.
It's not
right now. It just keeps going up. It keeps going up.
Yeah. See, I do this a lot. I always find it fascinating to get people out of their area of expertise and go, well, wait a minute. You know, I was here to talk about guns. No, I talk about the economy too. Okay, fine. All right. So tell us about, let's get a little bit of background on you. So let's go. So what did you do in the Air Force? I'm just curious.
I was a medic in the Air Force.
Oh.
Majority of my time as a flight medic or air medical evacuation. Then I PCS in 2012 to Herbert Field.
Okay.
And then retired in 2018 after 24 years.
Wow. Well, thank you for your service. And I should thank Derek for his service as well, too. Yeah, that's amazing. So, which raises, and this is totally off topic, too, the state of combat medicine has improved vastly over the last 20, 30, 40 years or so. In the time that you were in, what did you see change? What were you not able to do that you're able to do now? Just out of curiosity.
Well, something that changed, you know, the use of tourniquets. Before it was, especially when I first came in, the tourniquets were like, that was your last line of defense. Now the first thing you do is, you know, apply a tourniquet, and that's saved so many lives and so many limbs on the injured on the battlefield. So that's a major big improvement, yes. And then just a different type of bandages that stop the bleeding. That's improved so much. And then new airway technologies that just anybody out in the field can do. So,
is this something that, like CPR and the Heimlich maneuver and things like that, is this something that just us regular citizens should know? Would this be of help? God forbid there's another 9/11 situation, but, case where people are... Okay.
Yeah, definitely look into the Stop the Bleed campaign.
Okay.
And that will give you more information about, you know, stuff during a mass shooting, a car accident and stuff like that. You don't need to go out to become an EMT or paramedic level, but at least what you need to know during everyday situations.
You know, because there's certain people that run towards these things, and there's certain people that run away. I remember when a car flipped in front of me like three times. And there were four of us that leapt out of our cars, and most people just kept going or pulled over or whatever it is, got out of the way. But, I helped the guy out of the car with another guy, and there was another car that had an accident. Two other guys helped them, and we stopped traffic, we redirected them and stuff like that. And this guy was bleeding, not badly, but, you know, there's not much I could do, you know, as we waited for the ambulance, except keep him calm on the side of the road. He just flipped over his car three times. And I'm thinking to myself, thinking back to that incident, that would be a really good thing for me to know, because in the same way, you know, as I'm carrying my firearm, you know, if there is an emergency that calls for me to use it, you know, there might be also cause for me to help people and administer immediate first aid while we're waiting for the first responders. You know, that raises an interesting question too. Would it be interesting, or at least to offer along with concealed carry classes, first aid classes? I never thought about that till just now.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Again, you know, back to the mass shooter incidents, it's good to know. You may be helping yourself. You may be helping the person next to you, or even a total stranger. Or you're out hunting. Things happen while hunting. You know, your buddies might get hurt. You'd be able to help them. Or even accidents happen on the range, too. You know, early access is what we're always taught. So the earlier you can provide treatment, the earlier and more successful you can save that person.
You know, we might be onto something here, and this is something we can talk about more on the show, and you can certainly promote it here. But if you came up with a concealed carry combination first aid course, I'd take it in a second. And we just met. You know, but I think
– I'll definitely look into it, yeah.
Think about it. Think about that. This is a source of ideas. We do ideas like you wouldn't believe. But, I mean, that's the whole basis of the show. But I think that would be an amazing combination. It might serve as a model for concealed carry classes around Florida and all the states, you know, constitutional carry places, things like that, where people want further training to combine first aid. And even, you know, from a political point of view, you know, it'd be an interesting thing to do that. Just people say, wait a minute, we're also combining first aid with self-defense. Well, why are you doing that? Well, because we're here to protect lives, save lives, and stop threats. You know, it seems like to be an all... Derek, what do you think of my idea? Derek Stillon from Derek Park Financial Advisors. Okay. All right, we're joined this evening.
People are into that thing. Yeah, man. I mean, I think it works.
Okay. You got any gun questions for Donnie before we get into his store and other stuff like that? Because I know you probably have to leave in a few minutes. Or do you
know what is your organization, Donnie, again?
Yeah, go for it.
So I own Chaffee Tactical and Firearms. It's a home-based FFL. I started it a year before I retired, and now we just recently started a nonprofit called Escambia River Practical Shooters, in which we'll be holding USPSA matches at Escambia River Gun Club in Cotomac, Florida.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, more neighborhood fun. This is where we have to go shoot.
Exactly.
Okay. Derek, do you have more questions? Feel free.
No. It's just okay. I missed that part. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about this. Now, I want to get into the competitions. We have many things to talk about. And again, Donnie, whatever subject you want to cover, because like I say, I always tell people I have tons of questions, but I want to make sure that you cover the things that are your specialty, something I might forget to ask or whatever. Just, you know, feel free, jump right in. But competition. I started competing, 20 years ago, maybe. And I was not sure exactly how long it was. But the thing that I noticed about it, and I was actually, I took to shooting rather quickly. In fact, my first gun, I was raised in a, you know, a socialist, you know, anti-American family, you know, Canadian at the time, from Canada to Australia to the United States. And I came here. And so this kind of, you know, socialist liberal crap is sitting on my brain until I got married and actually had a murder on our street. And I thought, you know, I really should look into firearms, even though it's against everything I believed at the time, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, I looked into it. And I found I was good at it. You know, and then I thought, you know, and then I go through this transition where I've got a gun in the house, and I was, you know, a little afraid to have the gun in the house at first. And then this transition comes and I'm afraid not to have it. Okay. And then I went through the transition of I thought, well, it can do competing, because it seems that if you're at the target range, you're firing at your paper target. That's not really realistic. That's not a realistic defense scenario, because things are going to happen a lot faster. You know, the person that's trying to take your life is not going to sit there and not do something, you know, like firing back. You know, the paper target thing is good practice for accuracy, but it's not a realistic defense thing. And then I got into competing. And I got good at that too, not champion level, but it was pretty good, right? And so, but what that did was that increased my defense skills to just such a much higher level than I ever could have done just standing at the range shooting at paper targets. So let's talk competition. Tell me about USPSA, and then we'll go through that entire scenario that I just laid out there as far as the progression of gun owning. But tell me the story, USPSA.
USPSA, so it stands for United States Practical Shooters Association. It started in 1976. It's basically the U.S. region's version of IPSC, which is the International Practical Shooting Confederation. Mm-hmm. So this is what sometimes a lot of people see on TV or on YouTube. They'll see a person with a timer next to a person, say, "Are you ready? Stand by," and beep. And you'll see a person kind of running around with a fancy gun going around shooting targets. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what it is. And there's definitely divisions. There's open gun, there's carry optics, there's the limited division, and there's the production division. So
let's go over those. Wait. Okay. This is kind of fun. See, because I always figure there's non-gun people listening. And here's the thing, too. And I talked about this earlier in the show, that we've been heard in over 70 countries. You know, there are people, you know, in Morocco that just joined us. We've got Lithuania, it's one of our newer countries. You know, we have listeners in Bangladesh. We have Australia and New Zealand, which lost their guns. We talk about things here very casually in a way that I'm glad we can do it here. But I'm just saying, I always think back to the people in different countries that have no concept of this and never going to, because their countries are so restrictive. They don't trust their people with firearms. And here we are competing with them. And I think we need to sort of be conscious of that and realize that that this is a pretty special, you know, what we have here, and we need to, and even so, I still think our rights are ridiculously restricted and need to be, you know, fought for. But as we fight for our rights, hopefully we can, you know, encourage, you know, the rest of the world to fight for rights in their country, even to get basic firearm rights. So when you think of the categories here, you know, and like I said, there's people in this country that don't know what production versus carry optics, and I've forgotten the other two divisions. But it sort of makes sense from an ownership point of view too. I mean, how much do you want to compete with? How much do you want to own? Do you want the fanciest gun out there? You know, is that practical for self-defense, or is it only good for competition? You know, things like that. So what are the go ahead.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the divisions. So production is your basically run-of-the-mill, off-the-shelf firearm. Mm-hmm. Typically, you're going to have like your Glock 17s, Glock 19s, Glock 34. There's nothing really special that is done to these guns. Okay. It's basically there's some trigger work. You might maybe put some fiber optic sights, but it has to meet certain division requirements to stay in production. But the good thing about this, if anybody wants to get into USPSA, typically they probably have something in their gun safe that they can get out and shoot.
Okay. Yeah, production guns. Here's something interesting too. Oh, fiber optics, for those that don't know, it's like either a glass or a plastic, or it's a tube that allows natural light to enter it, and it lights up brighter than it would ordinarily. One of the biggest problems with sights is sometimes they're hard to see, especially in sunshine. So they've tried ridges, they've tried, you know, black color steel or whatever it is they do to them, so they make them more obvious. But fiber optics, I think, are one of the best things going, because it directly contrasts with a darker rear sight and a very much glowing almost front sight, so that you can see what you're doing. And I guess it's what they call it, quicker target acquisition. In other words, your eyes can line it up faster. So it's actually safer and more effective to use, either defense or competition. How am I doing?
Absolutely. Yep, okay. Doing great.
This is cool.
So then the next division is limited, which is a little bit of an upgrade from production. You can have a magwell. You can have a little bit more trigger upgrades, and you can shoot single action in this division, which the majority of the people shoot, you know, the modified double stack 1911s, which are called 2011s. And typically, majority of people will want to shoot 40 cal, which is, of course, a dying caliber, but they'll want to shoot 40 caliber in this division.
I like 40 caliber. What's wrong with 40 caliber? It's one of my favorite calibers. All right.
No, mine too. But you get the higher hit factor. So on a target, the center is typically called an alpha, so you get the highest hit, you get 5 points. But the next outside is Charlie's. Now, if you're shooting production on a Charlie hit, you get 3 points. But if you're shooting limited major, which would be the 40 caliber, you get 4 points. So if you want to combine your speed but still get the points, you want to shoot limited major.
Okay, now he's lost me totally. Great. This is a whole world, like, you know, and we cover different worlds here. We've got legal experts, we've got foreign policy experts, we've got, you know, all kinds of different folks that come on the show, economics. And I always try and sort of translate and bring it to, you know, a level people can understand. If you are someone that owns guns and does the regular target stuff at the range, I highly, highly encourage you to try a competition, or at least a lesson, or just try to qualify for the competitions, because you're going to learn how to draw from a holster. You're going to learn, you know, safety procedures. You can develop instincts that you don't already have. You're going to have the ability to not just stand there and calmly bring your gun up, you know, and take all day lining up your sights and focusing on the target, but you're going to have to do it quickly. And you have to actually slow down, because too fast, what's the saying? You can't shoot fast enough to miss, or however that works. You know, you have to learn discipline yourself, and you have to, you know, you control your breathing, and there's an emotional component to this, because you get the adrenaline going. And it's much closer to what you would experience in an actual self-defense situation by being in competition. That's why I think it's so valuable. So let's take a break and talk about that. Do you find the same thing that I do, that the ability that as you learn to compete, you know, the transfer skills, you know, for self-defense are just incredible?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. The biggest thing, because it induces stress. You know, when you're at a normal indoor range, which there's nothing wrong with that, and you're shooting at a piece of paper down the line, you're not really in a stressful situation. You can kind of sit there, pick up the firearm, and, you know, get your sights just right and everything. But in a competition, you know, you can go up there with the greatest stage plan. You feel like you're John Wick, and as soon as the timer goes off, you're a stormtrooper.
Yeah. So, but, yeah.
Yeah. So what it also does is, you know, it helps you, under stress, identify your targets. You're also drawing from a holster. It teaches you muzzle control and discipline, because we have very specific rules as far as not breaking the 180 and flagging personnel.
You should explain that.
You're also drawing
muzzle pointing.
So,
people don't understand that. Yeah.
So typically there's the 180. If you were to stick your arms out to the side, you can't go anything past behind you.
Yeah. Don't point your gun behind you, folks.
Everything has to be pointed downrange or at a 45-degree angle. So same thing when you're running back on the course of fire, you have to keep that muzzle pointed downrange while you're running up the stage. So that helps you, of course, with, again, muzzle control, discipline, that you're not pointing your firearm at something that you're not willing to shoot or destroy. And also it's teaching you to draw from a holster, which, again, a lot of people, you know, have their concealed carry, but do they really have experience from drawing from a holster, and do they know how they would do under a stressful situation if they did have to defend themselves or somebody else?
Yeah. Let me take a break, see if Derek or Gene have a question or comment at this point. Derek, did you want to get in?
No, I don't have anything. I mean, I'm listening to the conversation, but nothing to add right now.
Okay. Gene, you got a question
for Guy?
Okay. All right. So I'll leave it to you guys to just, you know, just jump in when you feel like it. I find that, let's talk holsters for a bit, because that's part of, so Chappie Tactical and firearms. The tactical part is the holsters. It's the accessories to the firearms themselves. Is that what you specialize in?
Yeah, that and other tactical equipment. I also, I sell helmets and body armor and vests and stuff like that too.
So, okay. So it's mostly law enforcement?
But yeah, the holsters is what basically – I also law enforcement, active duty military, retired military, reserves. But that's actually how I got into it. First thing was I built, you know, an AR-15, and I fell in love with building it. So then I went and got my firearms license, my FFL-07. And then I started making Kydex holsters, which is a thermo-moldable type of plastic. And from there, I started making concealed carry holsters, and now I'm also making competition-style holsters.
Okay, shameless plug. How do they get them? How do people get them? Do you have a website or a Facebook page you want to mention?
They can contact me at Chappie Tactical on Instagram, or they can go to facebook.com/ChappieTactical.
That's cool. Holsters. For everyone, I have my competition holsters, which are pretty easy. You don't have to worry about concealing them. But for a concealing, I want to talk about the whole idea of concealed firearms, especially for people who are new to it, because I have my own little adventure with that coming from California, where it's basically a socialist state without freedom. You can't carry a gun. You know, you know what's coming, right? The sheriff, you know, the sheriff says, well, you can carry a gun or not. And the sheriff says, no, you know, sheriff says yes to the politicians and big donors, you know, the sheriff, but this whole idea of May issue. I mean, all these sheriffs that say that should be arrested for violating our constitutional rights. But the point is, when people are new to concealed carry, there's certain things they don't tell you. One of the first places I needed to go on my errands that day was my bank. And I thought, damn, I'm going to walk into a bank with a loaded gun? Jeez, this is a whole new experience for me, right? It was perfectly legal. I mean, I'd taken my concealed carry course. I had my firearm. I had a decent holster. You know, I'd done all the right things. But still, there's a mental thing that people don't really talk about. And I did the first time I did, I called the bank. I said, look, I'm new here. I'm from California. Excuse me. You know, I said, I want to come in, but I'm going to be concealed carrying for the first time. Do you have a policy I should know about? And I think the woman said, yes, make sure you hit the bad guys if an emergency happens. I said, okay, great. Thank you. This is a great bank. I'm not going to mention who it is. You know, that's not the point. But the point is that the attitude in Florida, especially here in the Panhandle, is so different, you know, than California. It was nice to be an American. It was nice to be able to do that. And so here I am for the first time walking into a bank with a loaded gun, and it was like, it's okay. All right, Greg, you can do this. Yeah, we don't care. Of course, the biggest thing you're worried about is being seen. I think people are more worried about having a gun seen on them than they are worried about an actual emergency, even though that's crazy. And the second time I went, it was even better because the armored car was out with the cash. The guys were there, and I'm walking right by them. Hello, gentlemen. How are you this morning? Here I am with my Glock model 22.40 caliber 15-round magazine. I think to myself, no, now I'm walking by guys with the cash out front. This is interesting, you know. But you know, not that I was ever going to do anything, but it's the mental, you know, we've been so conditioned that only criminals carry guns or only police carry guns, you know, that regular citizens, you know, there's a – talk about this too, because I mean, I'm sure you get people with that same evolution. Now, if you're military, you're trained in firearms, so you kind of, you know, grew up and experienced them. But for people that didn't serve or are new to guns, there's a psychological component to carrying that's huge, right?
Yes, there is. I think a lot of people I think are fearful, like they're afraid they're going to drop it or they're going to pull it out at the wrong time. Yeah, they're just or they. They might not know where they're allowed to carry it or not allowed to carry it. So I definitely recommend everybody take a concealed carry class before they get their concealed license, which is a requirement. But also maybe even take a refresher or take some other classes that kind of go in depth about the laws and everything else.
Yeah. Do you remember first time? I don't know if you carried as part of your work, but remember first time as out in the civilian world carrying firearms? Or did you have any stories you want to tell?
It was a little bit different because, you know, on deployments, it's second nature to have your firearm. I was doing definitely the typical new guy with a concealed carry thing, you know, always checking to make sure it's there, always making sure that my shirt wasn't imprinting to show it was, you know, outlined or anything else like that. But then after a while, just like with all other training, it becomes second nature, and so you almost feel like you're you know, when you forget your cell phone when you leave the house. That's the same feeling you get when you go somewhere without carrying your firearm now.
Yeah. And of course, then the problem comes in of like the I remember there's certain few Congress people that have left their guns in the restrooms that walk through security. They're still carrying because it's no second nature. It never occurred to them not to have it, and so that's the other extreme. You don't want to be too comfortable. You always want to be aware that it's there. Which is interesting. Gene, do you think you could carry a concealed firearm? What do you think? Would that be something you would ever try to do?
Maybe in the future. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What would cause you to change your mind? Go ahead.
I think the climate of the culture climate, but also just to, I think it would be more empowering me to know that I am in control of my own safety. And not mm-hmm. only that, it just, I think it's liberating, freeing.
You know, this is something that I think people miss as well, that, you know, that feeling of freedom, that feeling that you are not only able to carry a firearm, you're responsible, and that you're in a place, you're in a country that's hopefully honored, you know, depending on where you are. And of course, rules are different places. But the point is that that's something that I don't think we talk enough about, that, you know, the reason to carry a gun is because you can. The reason to carry a gun is because it's the symbol of your freedom. It's the implement that helps you maintain your freedom, you know, not just from you know, terrorist activities and horrible situations and mass shooters and whatever else might happen. But, you know, we talk about the tyrannical government, you know, but more than that, that's not the real, that's not the most immediate thing to me. It's just the idea that as an American, I can carry a gun, and that's something a lot of people can't do. And I think we should talk about that more, that's part of it. You don't need a reason to carry a gun. The mere fact that you can carry one is enough of its justification, because that's your way of showing to you that, you know, who you are as a free American. Part of freeing American beings, it means if you want to, you can carry a gun. Donnie?
And absolutely. I'd like to actually say something about that. So
yeah, please.
A lot of people forget how lucky we are in America to have that right. And it's our Second Amendment right. I was on a Zoom meeting the other day with some of my exporters from Europe, mm-hmm. and we're all talking, you know, about firearms and everything. And in Holland, they have to be experienced for 1 year before they're allowed to buy a firearm. They basically have like a learner's permit. They have to go to a firing range once a month mm-hmm. and rent a gun and then get signed off. And then after that 1 year, they're allowed to buy a gun, and they're only allowed five – they can only own five firearms in their entire life.
And what idiot came up with that policy?
Exactly. We're here, you know, mm-hmm. we can go buy five in a week.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people forget that we do have it really well here.
Yeah. Do you know other countries that have pretty well? I mean, I think Switzerland and Israel are probably the two most closely comparable countries.
Does Switzerland, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Israel, definitely, you know, it's part of their culture and everything else. You know, it's just natural to see everybody walking around with an M4 rifle over there. You know, it's just part of who they are.
What's an M4?
You know, nobody thinks twice.
What's an M4, dude? Yeah.
So it's the little modified version of an M16 rifle.
Okay.
As they would say in air quotes, an assault rifle, but what we basically carry in the military.
Yeah, my God, an assault rifle. Let's talk about that, because we know there's no such thing. It's a made-up term. Actually, Hitler came up with that term. You know, he came up with the sporting rifle test. He came up with the assault weapon. So a lot of the stuff, I think, was who was it? Senator Chris Dodd of Connecticut. I think he's out of the Senate now. His father, you know, brought back the Nazi translation of, I think it was the 1933 or 38, you know, gun law. And that's what our 1968 gun law is modeled on. You know, and this came from Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership group. I should join again. I was a member for a long time when Aaron Zellman was around. But they talked about that. They talked about how these laws have been, you know, brought in from different countries. People don't realize, you know, what these gun folks are doing. And the idea that you can own five firearms, what kind of craziness is that? You know, what's wrong with six? You know, what's wrong with 10? If I want to put 50 AK-47s on my wall because I consider it art, who's to say I can't do that? And who's to say I can't leave them loaded if I want? Now, granted, I think that's personally stupid, but you know, it's legal. And a lot of times, you know, you need common sense. Because we can't make everything illegal that's against common sense. The laws would be infinite. But back to the whole idea of an assault rifle, an assault weapon. Let me give you the classic liberal question. Well, Donnie, why do you need an assault rifle? I love this question.
No, yeah.
You want to take that one on?
Because I can. That's my answer.
That's a good answer.
I'm an American. And I'm an American, and we're free, so I can. That's my answer. Even though there's not an assault rifle,
mm-hmm.
I'm allowed to have firearms, so that's my answer.
Yeah. So. It's God-given right. And here's the thing, too. I think when do you get, like, non-gun folks dropping into your store and trying to criticize you, or are they just – they know better? Or do you have a store, or is this home-based, like you said?
at home base, so at, by appointment. But not really my customers. I think sometimes out and about, I get a lot of people that criticize, especially when they see me like wear my hat with my business logo and stuff like that. They kind of criticize, especially when you go to Starbucks. I think that's when you get the most critical. All you can do is, you know, educate them. And sometimes I've changed a lot of people's minds about it. So they might not know, you know, exactly that, you know, assault rifle really doesn't exist, which stands for, you know, Armalite rifle, or they've never been, maybe been to a range. And, you know, I've taken people to the range that then, that never even touched a gun before. After they left, they went and bought one. So,
funny thing about that, people don't realize it's actually fun. You know, yes, it's a, it could be a problem. You know, same thing when I used to teach flying, and when I was a flight instructor, people were like, oh, you can go up in a little airplane and buzz around the sky, and it's a huge responsibility. Well, yeah, it is, but it's also fun. Okay, same thing with sailing. I used to race sailboats with a friend of mine. You know, his dad, this was back in high school, had a racing, I think it was called a Lightning. You know, and we weren't that fast, but we had fun. And we used to hike out, you know, the side and have most of our body, you know, 3 inches above the water. And one day it was all jellyfish. Was that safe? No, but it sure was fun. You know, so, but we made it safe by, you know, by doing, well, it wasn't the smartest thing to do, but, you know, by taking precautions. So in other words, yes, there are inherent risks in everything, but if you don't, you know, dare to do things responsibly, you're never going to do anything. And this, the other thing that gets me is this whole idea of, you know, well, that rifle can hold 30 rounds. Well, yeah, but what do you think the owner's going to do? If the owner is a criminal recently paroled by mistake, yes, that could be a problem. But if it's the law-abiding gun owner who studied the gun, who's been responsible, taking courses, practices regularly, you know, does their maintenance, you know, and does everything properly, the fact that they may have a 1,000-round magazine is not going to be a problem. Whereas a criminal with a derringer, with a two-shot derringer, could do a hell of a lot more damage illegally. And this sort of legal, illegal, there's an assumption, I think, that because, you know, guns can do illegal things, that people who own them are going to do illegal things. And that's why if we ban the gun, then we can stop the owner from doing illegal things. But crime doesn't work that way in any instance. You know, we don't ban cars because people drive drunk. You know, we don't close down the depositors' bank accounts because people rob banks. You know, in the same logic, you can't take away guns from the law-abiding because certain people use them illegally. There's a difference. There's a division. And the Second Amendment was not designed for criminals. It doesn't cover criminals. It doesn't mention criminals. It says own and carry. It doesn't say use. And the reason it doesn't say use is because there are legal uses and there are illegal uses. And if you don't understand that, you don't understand the Second Amendment. How am I doing?
Exactly. You're right on point. And I think that's the problem with the politicians making all these laws, thinking, no, let's, you know, a criminal does this, so let's punish the law-abiding citizens. If anything, you know, gun owners are the most law-abiding citizen because they want to keep their rights, you know, and they're trained. And we're going to follow the rules and the laws. Mm-hmm. You can take away firearms and put whatever law, but a criminal's not going to follow that. So don't punish us for what the criminals do, you know. So that's my feelings on it.
Okay. Let's talk holsters. How do people pick a holster? How do they, for a new concealed carry or even people who have been doing it for a while, say, damn, this thing's uncomfortable. I don't like it. I don't want to carry it as much. It's a pain in the ass, you know, but they still want to carry. What's the world of holsters doing these days?
A lot of people are using appendix carry, which they're carrying in the front. Of course, it all depends on how they're going to carry it, their day-to-day life, maybe even if they're carrying on a job. Are they sitting in a car most of the day? The type of firearm that they're using, are they using something small like a Glock 26? Are they using a single stack like a Glock 43? Or are they carrying a Glock 17, Glock 19? It all depends on the firearm, their body type, and again, their day-to-day operations or daily life.
Do you suggest particular holsters for people depending on their lifestyle, life, and things that they're doing? Can you match people to holsters?
Appendix, I can. Yep. I really push more towards the appendix carry, just because the axis is, you know, at the front of them for a draw. I really tell people to avoid the use. I call it the FBI carry. You know, the firearm and the small of their back, because it's just kind of awkward to draw the firearm from that position. And
yeah, you're sitting on it too, right? In the car?
they're sitting on your gun. In the car. Let's say you do get in a scuffle with somebody. If they get thrown down, you know, if that's sitting on their spine and then all of a sudden they fall down on it, they're pretty much in a world of hurt. So,
appendix is in where's the appendix carry? Is that like right in front of the belt? Is that where we see these guys in these movies,
yeah,
you know, stuffing large guns into their pants? I'm like, don't shoot your man part off.
Yeah, kind of off-centered of their man part. That's basically where it's carried at. Yeah.
How is that comfortable? James is listening to this too. She's like, what are you guys talking about now? Sorry.
You actually be amazed.
Exactly.
I mean, there's times I forget that it's there. So.
Okay. All right. Gene? You want to get to this? Where would you carry a gun, Gene, if you had to?
I don't know. Probably in my waist, my pants. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Here's socks. And I was. What was that? That was the last thing. I'm sorry.
In a sock.
In a sock with an ankle carry. Yeah. I think this is a great show for just thinking of new ideas. Would it make sense? Has anybody ever thought of like a combination carry where when you're up and about and moving around, it might make sense to have it? Because I'm more of the FBI outside the belt holster. I don't like, you know, holsters inside my belt. It's uncomfortable. And so for me outside, I brought specifically long shirts. So, you know, anybody that knows me says, he's probably carrying his gun today. You know, but I don't care. You know, I'm concealing, I'm doing the right thing. But sitting in a car, it's almost inaccessible. And so has anybody thought to have two holsters? So in other words, when you sit in your car, you know, you take your gun from your holster. Of course, that someone might say that's brandishing, so we need some legal protections from this. But transfer it to like a shoulder holster, and for the time you're in the car, because at least it's accessible there. And then if you want to walk about, that might not be the most comfortable. You might want to put it back in your belt holster with a clip or something like that. Has anybody ever done like multiple holster combinations from car to activities?
I've done it where I've made like a concealed holster that's accessible, that's kind of under the steering wheel. So once they get in the vehicle, they can take it out, their firearm from their belt holster, put it right there, and then
car
right
holsters. This is new. Yep. I never heard of this. Tell me about car holsters. This sounds great. I think I might get one. We got to talk.
Oh yeah. So basically, it's basically the same style for whatever firearm that they're using that's mounted somewhere underneath their dash or to like the side of their center console.
Okay.
And it's easily accessible. And then again, when they're driving, they can keep it there. When they get out of their vehicle, they can take that out and put it back into their holster that they're carrying.
Mm-hmm. Is there any laws against brandishing that would cause a problem with that in Florida? Because we don't have, probably don't know the other states, but is that an issue at all?
No. As long as you get pulled over, what I recommend is, even if you're not carrying, always give the law enforcement officer your concealed carry card and let them know, hey, just to let you know I'm carrying a firearm, it's right here. Do you want to call for backup to look at it? And most 9 out of 10 times they're like, no, thanks for telling me, because you're also protecting them. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I would come to the aid of a police officer in a second. I wouldn't even think about it. That would not be a problem. I think most gun owners would do that, too. And so we're, you know, in fact, I had an idea for a program a while back, like a citizen alert program, where certain citizens could be, you know, receive a higher level of training, you know, especially anti-terrorism, you know, things to look for, body language, you know, emergency stuff. So they're more aware in various situations, especially big city folks, where they could you know, if you're a concealed carry person, you know, and you probably go through a background check, you get a not full training, but you get a higher level of training and you have more things to look for. And, you'd be trained to call the police right away, you know, if this is a situation, but you'd also be able to handle it better than just a basic concealed carry holder. That might be something for us to talk about, too.
Yeah, a lot
this
of
is fascinating.
Are actually
go ahead.
Doing that. A lot of churches are actually doing that. Yeah, where they have a certain group of individuals who know each other that are carrying within the church during a church service. They've gone through extra training. So it kind of, they know, hey, during this scenario, here's the exit. During this scenario, here's the exit. Who's going to take out the assailant? Who's going to call 911? Who's going to provide medical coverage? So yeah, and actually some small businesses, private businesses are doing that as well too.
Yeah. So there's nothing illegal about carrying in church unless the church specifically says don't carry in church, as far as I know. In Florida?
Correct. I believe so, yes.
Yeah. And people have this weird thing about church. This would be worth talking about this too for a minute. Because why would you want to carry a gun in church? That's God's house. Well, folks, if you believe, and I've said this before on the show, if you believe as I do, as most people who believe in our individual rights, that our rights come from God, it's a birthright. We're born with this. Why would you not carry a gun honoring God who created and gave us these rights in the first place? To me, the church is a perfect place to carry. How's that for an explanation you can use?
Oh, I agree. You know, because,
okay.
You know, evil can happen anywhere. Just because you're in God's house doesn't mean evil's not going to come in. So
yeah, that's for sure.
I feel the better prepared you are, the least chance of it happening. So
okay. Let me throw this to you. Anything that we about your business or firearms or products or, you know, your favorite gun, anything that you wanted to bring to the show this morning?
Just one more discipline probably of competition shooting. I think if anybody who wants to get into competition shooting and also kind of wants to have that discipline towards real life self-defense like they're going to carry, it's called IDPA. It's the International Defensive Pistol Association. It was started in 1996 by a group of shooters that did shoot USPSA, but they wanted the sport to kind of gear towards more accuracy and defensive style shooting versus it's all about your gun, you know, as much money you put in your gun. They want people to use like their everyday carry guns to be in scenarios to compete, how, you know, that they reload, they shoot and move, that they're wearing concealed garment. So that's a sport I recommend people, if they want to start shooting competitions, get into IDPA first. It's a little bit of a slower sport than USPSA as far as shooting and moving and stuff like that. But, it does teach kind of real world scenarios, at least, you know, because you have to start, you know, typically hands on the side and on the start button, you have to push back your concealed garment and go from a draw. And then you also have to shoot your targets in a certain array as you see them. It's called slicing the pie. So if you're turning a corner, you shoot the first target that you see, which might not be the closest. So it's typically the farthest, but it's the first target you see. So.
Interesting. Yeah, I like IDPA. I did a few years in IDPA, and I like it because of the practical aspects, because you use the regular gun. And I've always contended that, and I got Pianchi, I'll get to you in just a second, one of our regular callers, that you know, people that I've seen, I guess they call them race guns, the fancy guns that people, bring to competitions. They'll take a perfectly good gun that engineers have spent, you know, a lot of time, and the gun companies have invested millions of dollars in a particular gun, and they rip the guts out of it. They put all kinds of new stuff in, thinking it's going to be better. As if all those engineers and all that money into it was for nothing. I buy a Glock because I don't have to do anything to it. It works.
Yeah.
It works as it comes, as they say, out of the box. So to me, it makes much more sense to use the practical, you know, the gun that I have for self-defense, the gun that I have for home, the gun that I carry is the same gun I want to compete with because that's my gun. That's the one that I will use, you know, and there's maybe a couple of them different ones. I've got that's a 45, the Model 20 Glock. I've got the Model 22, which is the 40 caliber, you know, and those are ones that I would carry. I wouldn't want to carry a 9/11 because I don't want to go cocked and locked, as they say, with the hammer back. And also you don't want to be in a position where you have to yank that slide back and load around if someone's pointing a gun at you. You don't have time, you know? So there's different reasons, but this is why I love IDPA. Just for that aspect that the closer the competition can get to real life, and it is a bit slower. But again, when I competed in IPSC, that other one, I was not, you know, specialized. I was never the fastest shooter, but I was one of the most accurate. And that's where I get my points, just because I don't move quickly anyway. But because I was much more accurate than a lot of people who were shooting more bullets faster, I did better and was in the standings because of it. Let's get Pianchi on the line too. So Pianchi, we've got a new guest. Let's try that again. There we go. We have a new guest for you. Donnie Chapman's filling in for Jim Dykes this morning. And now you can come back on your own too. I mean, I don't want to think that you're just kind of like filling in here today. It's nice to have you. But if you have a product, if you have a new service, you have something, you have a big announcement, I think you got some competitions coming up. Either let me know or just call the show. You know, feel free. But let me know that I can schedule some time because I want you to be a regular here. This is good. Pianchi, you're on with Donnie Chapman, who has Chappie Tactical and Firearms. Go ahead, sir.
Well, it's nice to meet him. Did you make mention about the incident Larry Elder had yesterday? You're on firearms.
We're doing guns right now, and we need to talk about that. I'm trying to schedule it because I've got a guest Monday and Tuesday, and I think the election is the 14th, which is – hang on, let me just get my calendar here. I think the election's Tuesday. If you want to talk about it real quickly, yeah, feel free. Yeah, the election's Tuesday. I'm going to do something on Monday.
I'll go talk about it. And what happened to him was actually racist. One, you had a white woman in a gorilla mask that threw eggs at him. That was assault.
Yeah.
And she was concealing her identity with the mask. Then you had a black man who was hollering and, you know, telling him he shouldn't be around. Well, that's racist, too. And then you had systemic racist when you had the Los Angeles Times called him basically the Ku Klux Klan in blackface. But nothing
now,
is heard when left to do it.
No, and I came up with something I posted last night. I think I told you as well beforehand that the left has taken race out of racism. Racism has nothing to do with race anymore. It's all about you don't agree with me, therefore you're a racist. And a black guy, the white face of racism, is intellectually irrational. And so I don't want to take too much time on that right now, just because I want to talk to Donnie. He's, you know, he's calling in.
Yeah, you know,
but let's,
getting back to guns.
Yeah,
on the gun laws.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the excellent point you're making.
You have these politicians.
Uh-huh.
You have these politicians like Sheila Jackson Lee, who's having problems in the area that she represents, but she wants to enact a law that's going to cover the whole nation. I never could understand that. Why should I be forced to do some of the things that she's talking about? And I don't even live in her district. And, you know, from now on, I think that we should start writing gun laws that include your Star Trek and Star Wars type weapons. Because let's put them in there now.
Where did that come from? What, a phaser? Donnie, are you going to sell phasers anytime?
Phasers, and lightsabers and all that. Because, well, just think, if they had included ammunition back there when it was writing the Second Amendment, you wouldn't see such ridiculous laws as registering and serialized bullets.
Well, no, but that's arms. You see, the extension. Well, we can get this a little bit too, because it's a good point that the arms can include battleships. So there have been privately owned battleships. We had owners of battleships going against the British in the War of 1812. You know, and so the Second Amendment is a very, you know, where does the definition of arms end? The normal one I'm used to is that if you can carry it, it's arms. If an individual can carry it, if an individual, you know, infantry soldier or citizen militia person can carry it in your arms, you know, that's Second Amendment covered. If it requires a team of people, now you're talking about a infantry army weapon. That's a different category. But as far as it goes, yeah. Do you see any limitations, Donnie, for the individual in terms of what arms we can carry? You know, whether it's a saber, a lightsaber, you know, a gun that shoots a particle beam weapon or, you know, sometime in the future. You know, it's not the technology. The Second Amendment wasn't written for technology. It was written for the right of ownership, carrying it. The technology is irrelevant to the type of gun. Are you with us on that too? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And it's okay. Also, you know, they did know back then that we'd have certain type of ammunition or firearms. Mm-hmm. So they left it, you know, open and broad, just like the First Amendment. You know, they didn't mm-hmm. say, hey, you can't say this, but you can say this on social media. It wasn't social media back then. The First Amendment is your freedom of speech, whether it's across all avenues. So I believe it's the same thing for firearms, too. You know, the right to carry shouldn't just be restricted to what was written back then. It should be, you know, firearms that we have now and firearms in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have to hold up in a little bit. I'm going to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece on the Articles of Confederation a little bit here. So I'm going to kind of finish up with Donnie next up, 3-4 minutes or so. This has been fun. So you definitely have to come back.
Oh, yeah.
New products, new guns, well, thank you. What's on the horizon for either carry or competition? Can you give us like a preview of coming attractions of firearms?
Yeah, actually, coming attractions for the competition world. So we just started a USPSA club called the Scandia Living Practical Shooters.
Okay.
Again, we're going to start our first competition in January. It's going to be the first Saturday of every month at a Scandia River Gun Club in Cantonment.
Oh, I'm going to join. I want to be there.
Yeah,
it's going to be fun. Yeah.
Yep. And then, yeah, and at that time, too, then you can come check out the range. We're doing some improvements there. We're pushing one of the ranges up at 600 yards. We're going to add more competition days.
Okay.
So, yeah, come on out to Scandia River Gun Club in Cantonment and check it out. It's a great outdoor range, and you can not only you can just, you know, shoot different types of guns, but you can also practice your day-to-day carry. You know, you can draw from a holster. You can
At the regular range?
Concealed carry. You can, at the re- yes. Because
oh, wow.
The
See,
range,
that's good.
We have a bunch, yeah. of, bunch of different ranges out there. So okay. What's crowded to us out there, it's actually so open because you can literally have a whole bay to yourself.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, the ability to draw from a whole space. Yeah. Go ahead, Pianki.
You got to get the youth involved also and you have certain things like scholarships for youth in competition.
Hmm. There you go.
So actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. So we are a Florida nonprofit with the Escambia River Practical Shooters that we just started, and we also applied for our federal 501c as a nonprofit. So what we would like to do to give back is we are going to do things as for the youth. We're going to do, you know, like you said, scholarships. We're also going to do like some of our matches. We're going to do canned food drives. We're going to do drives for veteran homeless associations. We're going to do a lot of stuff that actually gives back to the community. You know, one, I think it's important to give back to the community, but also lets other people know, hey, the gun world isn't a bunch of what people label fuds, you know, that we're just all gun-toting crazy.
Bunch of redneck, fascist, militia types out there with big Harley Davidson motorcycles and guns that we don't need. That's, you know, that's the image that they're trying to play. And we're just regular folks. There are black gun owners, there are white gun owners, there are women gun owners, there are tall gun owners, short gun owners. Gun owners are, this is what I love about the Second Amendment. It's universal. You know, there's no qualification. There's no personal, you know, identity that's required to be a gun owner. Everybody can be a gun owner. It's America.
Exactly. It's America. Yeah. And the great thing, too, at these competitions is everybody's so welcoming, you know, and, you know, people of all walks of life from all different types of careers are there. Everybody, you know, you feel like family there. And if you want to compete, and let's say you don't have the gear to compete, people are willing to share because we want people to come out and compete, and we want people to, you know, uphold their Second Amendment rights. So we want you to come back.
Yeah. So yeah. Sounds good. On that note, I have to leave you. Hold on just a second. I'm going to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers. It's my sponsor. So, and it's fun making these episodes too. So Donnie, you're welcome to listen in or catch it on the podcast. Donnie Chapman of Chappie Tactical and Firearms. And of course the gun range, we're going to talk about that too. I want to hear about the competition. I'll have you on before January. We'll talk about this more, but I got to play this right now. Pianki, you're welcome to hang on the line. Gene, of course, too. Donnie, thank you so much for joining us. And let me play this now. And as I say, if you have to go, you have to go. If not, we'll have maybe like a minute at the other end. Here we go.
Okay.
This is Greg Penglos for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. It has occurred to me in discussing the Anti-Federalist Papers in relation to the Articles of Confederation that the Anti-Federalist Papers seem to be lacking in context, having not gone over the Articles of Confederation in this series on our founding documents. During the time period we are analyzing, the Constitution had been written and was in the process of being sold to the individual states in order to be ratified. So at the time of this debate, the country was still under the Articles of Confederation. People could clearly see how the Articles worked and what the Anti-Federalist Papers were getting at. Whereas with the Federalist Papers, there was no experience with the Constitution, so it was like they were advertising with the Federalist Papers to sell their product with no knowledge of how or if that product worked. My impressions formed over time of the Articles is that they didn't work, weren't strong enough, caused trade wars, and were generally inefficient for government to operate. Now, rather than read scholarly works to try to convince me of their point of view, I shall go over the Articles myself using reason, logic, and my knowledge of history, so that you can then draw your own observations and conclusions as to the overall question of that time, should the United States adopt the new Constitution or fix the problems of the Articles of Confederation. History is written by winners, and I assume the perceptions and opinions of the winners are handed down through time as well. Since the Constitution was ratified and the Federalists were the winners, it makes sense that even today, the perceptions and opinions of the Articles of Confederation would be as the Federalists saw it. And so they would have perpetuated through time their opinion
that the Constitution was superior, even if their motives in part were as shallow as to want the Constitution simply because it would give them more power and a bigger federal government than was possible under the Articles of Confederation. And that question I will leave to you to ponder. From the Articles of Confederation Preamble. Whereas the delegates of the United States of America in Congress assembled did on the 15th day of November in the year of our Lord, 1777, and in the second year of the independence of America, agree to certain Articles of Confederation and perpetual union between the states of New Hampshire, Massachusetts Bay, Rhode Island, and Provincetown Plantations, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. Article 1. The style of this Confederacy shall be the United States of America. Article 2. Each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right which is not by this Confederation expressly delegated to the United States in Congress assembled. Article 2 appears very much like the 10th Amendment, where powers not specifically delegated to the federal government in the Constitution are reserved to the states. Now, why would this be left out of the original Constitution when it already existed in the Articles of Confederation? It later had to be put back in when the Bill of Rights was adopted some 4 years after the ratification of the Constitution. Could it be said, as I believe, that the Federalists actually left out state protections and limitations of federal power guaranteed by the Articles of Confederation in order to form a more powerful and larger federal government without those limitations and protections? This is just the first example. Article 3. The said states hereby severally enter into a firm league of friendship with each other for their common defense, the security of their liberties, and their mutual and general welfare, binding themselves to assist each other against all force offered to or attacks made upon them or any of them on account of religion, sovereignty, trade, or any other pretense whatsoever. Article 3 contains some of the future First Amendment to the Bill of Rights with regard to religion. Article 3 also contains a strong clause of mutual protection by the states themselves for the states themselves. The Constitution has the Congress and President as the sole protector of the states. The Constitution, as ratified, removed any mutual cooperative pact such as this between the states, so that under the Constitution, it is the federal government only which holds the country together and binds the states to the United States, and the states themselves have become isolated islands, operating individually and separately under the Union, with no mutual support or protection. This removal of the firm league of friendship appears to have been necessary for the Federalists so that the federal government under the Constitution shall not have to compete with the mutual friendship pledged by the states to each other in the Articles of Confederation. Thus, the federal government would have no rival government domestic power, nor check and balance on itself, and as such could eventually conquer the states, having thus divided them under the Constitution into individual units separate from each other. One wonders if the Confederate states formed their Confederacy in part to create the same firm league of friendship against the Union that resulted in the Civil War, but might never have happened had all the states of the Union had a mutual pledge of friendship and security binding them to assist each other against the ever-increasing power of the federal government in Washington, D.C. Was Lincoln as much a Federalist as those who ratified the Constitution, and just as adamant against the states binding together in any form, as a rival to the federal government's power, irrespective of the question of slavery? This raises the question of whether the states should once again enter into a firm league of friendship today for their security against the overwhelming and still increasing power of the federal government. Would such a States United Pact be equal or greater to the United States federal government, where all the states were bound together to assist each other against all force offered to or attacks made upon them per Article 3 of the Articles of Confederation by the national government? Think about that this week before we continue with the next part of the Articles of Confederation. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Well, we just have enough time to say goodbye. Unfortunately, I didn't leave enough. Donnie, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Gene, Pianchi, great to have you on. And we'll do it again next week at 7 o'clock. And I just want to say, Pianchi, I want to talk to you. I want to see if we can cover Larry Elder in the first half hour Monday morning. So that'll be 7 o'clock Central Time. We'll see if we can do that. But thank you all. Greg Penglis for Action Radio, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back again Monday morning at 7 o'clock.
Have a good day and a good weekend.
There we go.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you all, everybody. Wow, what a great show. I had fun today.